Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. Your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, grateful that you can join us tonight. And as we have been announcing, we are live here in Nashville, Tennessee, doing our traveling informational piece here for Building Families and Communities Institute, specifically Parent Choice Network. And that's really what it's about. It's about empowering parents to take control of their children's education and ultimately set them on a path for a healthy, productive life. We realize that there are many challenges. We discussed last week that there's no perfect parent. But tonight, again, our intent is to offer information to empower parents through awareness. Now, let me just start by apologizing. Tonight, we had a special guest that was going to join us, Ms. Esperanza, or Hope McQuarrie. However, due to circumstances beyond her control and ours, she was not able to be here tonight. She does send her apologies, and she promised that as soon as she can, she will definitely give us a rain check to be with us when that is possible. But we're grateful for her agreeing to do so. Now, as parents, we all know that the Tennessee State Department of Education exists. And many times there are a lot of questions that parents have, a lot of things that are not clear to them about choice options, and sometimes even their responsibility in terms of their engagement with schools and the whole process of engaging principals and things of that nature. So we hope to be able to alleviate some of that, cloudy or fuzzy things and answer those questions for us. The number to give us a call here is 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. We'll be on until about 7:30 tonight, and we welcome you on Facebook to give us a call and or post your question or comments via Facebook. We'd be happy to entertain you and answer those questions as best we can. And again, we're just happy about the opportunity to share this information. Now, we have prepared some questions for our guests, But nonetheless, we'll continue on, and what we'll do is we'll kind of open the floor to some things, and as we engage, we'll be able to basically discuss some things that are germane to you. So I'm gonna we're gonna turn this more into an open mic type situation, and I'm gonna encourage you to go ahead and give me a call here, 657-383-0944, and let's just chat. Let's talk about what's on your mind and how we might be able to be of assistance to you. Facebook, feel free to give us a call here, 657-383-0944. Or you can feel free to post your question and or your comments, and we'll be happy to respond to those accordingly as well. Let's do this. Let's talk about a little bit of public education in Tennessee, because that was one of the topics that we were looking to do. And we'll extend this conversation on our regular time on this coming Thursday, from 7 to 9 p.m. But for tonight's purposes, let's talk about public education, a little bit of the history. And we'll start from, believe it or not, 1791. A lot of times there's a question about why and when did the government get in the business of educating young people. So let's talk from that historical perspective. And while I do that, I'll wait your question or your comments, your call into the studio here, 657-383. And if we have anyone live in our audience who'd like to ask a question, I'll be happy to answer them for you as well. This is what this is all about. And again, this is intended to be an engaging activity. So feel free to just shoot us your questions, either on Facebook, again, or give us a call here, 657-383-0944 is the number that you can call. But as we do that, let me just give a little background, a little historical background on education in general, and then we'll try to bring ourselves up to the present point in Tennessee, some things that are germane to Tennessee. Did you know that the Bill of Rights was passed by Congress in the United States in 1791. There was no mention made then of education in any of the amendments that we saw to the Constitution. You know, there were 10 amendments then. However, the 10th Amendment itself to Congress or of the Constitution, I should say, it states that the powers are delegated to the federal government and are reserved to states. So in other words, states have the authority to make certain laws and things of that nature. Education becomes a function of the state rather than the federal government. So as we were saying, the U.S. Constitution did not address it. But again, through the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution, we find what's called states' rights relative to education. So each state has its own legislation or laws governing public education. And in this regard, the state of Tennessee has its own information relative to that. Now, a little later, in around 1806, that was the official recognition of public education, and with the passing of what was called the Secession Act of 1806, public education was specifically recognized. Now, this compact with the federal government required Tennessee in particular to furnish 100,000 acres of land to two colleges to reserve an additional 100,000 acres for the purpose of establishing an academy in the county. So interestingly enough, as early as 1806. There was a comeback, the Secession Act of 1806, where the state of Tennessee engaged in some sort of agreement arrangement with the federal government to reserve land to start an academy. Okay? And I share this with you so that you can kind of understand that education is perhaps one of the most important rights that a citizen can have. And what it does is it empowers each citizen to have knowledge and to be able to determine their own path of life and success. And it's a very, very important tool, which is why I'm convinced that it was necessarily deemed as an important right to every citizen to get a quality education. Now we know that, unfortunately, historically, there have been some issues where in the public sphere, things have not quite been like we would want them to be for everybody. We know that there's been some turmoil and things of that nature in terms of tensions based on race, things based on resources and opportunities. And I'm grateful that we've gotten better in America. And I'll say here in Tennessee, things have gotten better, believe it or not. While I know that there are a lot, many people who are still frustrated and upset with the public education process, there are some good things that we can look at. And I want to believe that, in general, across party lines, everybody is concerned about our children. Having taught in a public school setting myself, I had the privilege and the pleasure of working with some very talented, committed educators who did the very best that they could to address the needs of their students and so forth. So again, I want to emphasize that we recognize that even though there are challenges, let's be honest about it, there are some challenges. A lot of times parents are trying to cut through the weeds because all they really want is for the children to be successful. And I think we can all appreciate that. Anybody who's had children can certainly appreciate that. And so we want you to know that while we recognize that the fact that things are not perfect, there's an opportunity to continue to work collectively to get them where we want them to be. What do you say, Mr. Coleman? Join us on Facebook here. The number here to call is 657-383-0944. And we're just waiting on you. We'll open up the microphones to our listening audience here. And this is a special. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. And this is a special podcast episode, a presentation, germane to Parent Choice Network. You see our banner behind us, and I want to encourage you to go to pcntn.org because there is more information that you can gain from there. And you can basically see if you qualify for educational savings account. It is a process by which you do have to qualify. And we'll just talk a little bit about some of what it is, what they can be used for specifically is roughly $7,100 will increase over a period of time each year. And these funds may be used at vendors that are pre-approved by the Department of Education for things like tuition and fees from pre-K through 12. 11th grade, I'm sorry. Things like fees for transportation, required textbooks, computer devices, school uniforms, tutoring services that are provided by a tutoring facility, summer after school education. We know that a lot of times children have a lot of dead time, and the instruction that they've received during the regular school year oftentimes is lost. By the time they spend a whole summer disengaged from academic enrichment and activity. So those are some things that you can look at as well. Educational therapy or related therapy, fees for high school and dual enrollment courses, colleges and universities. These are things that many parents are looking for who may be working very hard. If you ever been someone who know what it's like to work from paycheck to paycheck, I can identify. You can appreciate the fact that there are many things out there that if you could, you would do. But what the educational savings account does is provide opportunity for you to do those things, to get prep for things like SAT and ACT, other tutorial services relative to math and perhaps science courses, things of that nature, whatever the need is that are there. It's an opportunity. And this is about the parent being able to say that, hey, I recognize my child needs a little bit more help, and if I can, if it's possible, I take advantage of some resources and opportunities. Hence the opportunity that we're speaking of right now with Educational Savings Account, or ESA for short. All right. So that being said, we'll keep going, and we'll get the phone lines open. You can give us a call here, 657-383-0944. Be happy to entertain your question and or your comment relative to the Parent Choice Network. Now, let me just reiterate that Building Families and Communities is working to provide that information to you in concert with the American Federation of Children, and avoiding anything other than educating and empowering parents, we are diligently working again to get this information out to each and every one of you. And I'm looking back here, and so we have a caller. We'll go to our phone line. Feel free to give us a call here at 657-383-0944. And if you're in the Nashville area, we want you to give us a holler, give us a call. If you follow us on Facebook Live, give us a call, and we'll be happy to entertain you. So right now, our phone lines are open to the national public. So we are looking forward to encourage you, if you're here in Nashville, to call us. But we open our phone lines. The podcast is a national podcast. And on the line, we have now a caller from the St. Louis area. Last four digits of your phone number is how we will identify you. 4644, we'll take your call now. Welcome to Talk Straight. Tonight was designed for us to speak with a state official, but they were not able to be here due to circumstance, so we got an open mic talking about parent choice and the Parent Choice Network. Question or comment?
Well, I hope it's about parent choice when it comes to schooling and education.
You say you did. You hope what now?
I see. I assume you're speaking along the lines of choice for school education.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. That's what we've been talking about. And we'll be talking about that from this point forward. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have always been a proponent for parents being able to take their children and put them in the educational environment that they feel best for their child's long term and that of the family's plan for their child's education. And the money should follow the child.
Okay.
Because I have witnessed so many times that you have children sitting in a setting, a traditional setting, where just quite frankly, they're more advanced, more astute than the rest of the students in the classroom. And they are not being challenged. They are not being given the leeway in order to propel themselves. They're basically being held captive, and that's wrong.
Mm. Okay. All right. You know, I can appreciate that. And having been an educator myself in the public school setting, I mentioned that earlier, I understand both sides of it because I have met many parents, callers, who have expressed frustration with, you know, the quality of education that they were receiving and the brick wall they would describe between being able to get their children really what they needed. And in Tennessee now, there's a new opportunity for parents to, even if your child is in public school, to be able to get some tutorial support. A lot of parents, that's what they do. If they can afford it, if their child is struggling academically, they notice that, they go and, you know, they pay for professional tutors to help them out. And we also talked about during the summertime, where there's this lack in dead time between the end of school and the beginning of school in the fall, where children tend to lose some of the information they gain simply because they're distracted and pulled away from it. What do you think of that?
Well, yes, and it goes further than getting the tutor. The family should have a plan for their long-term educational goal for their child from the beginning. And they should place them in situations, environments, and in the facilities that would help deliver them to those goals. And the goals could be multifaceted, because the skill that you need for one thing, well, a part of the coursework along the way can be also a requirement in another direction. So that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, here's the thing, though, and we've talked about this on the show before. There's a challenge with, and we won't say everybody. It's not fair to paint everybody with a broad brush. But there's a challenge with accessing information. Now, we say all you have to do is look for it. It's out there, and that's true. That's true. It is out there. It's available. But for there's a an additional need to go further to make people aware and perhaps shadow them in the process of accessing and then acting on that information. And that's one of the things that we're doing with the Parent Choice Network, is we want to be a buffer for parents who are seriously concerned. And perhaps for them, they didn't do well in school. Perhaps their, you know, academic experience was not the best, but they want the best for their children, and they just don't know how to go about getting there or doing that. And that's one of the things that we recognize, and we can say that, that, you know, people, as an adult, it's your responsibility to know and to act and so forth, which is all true. But there is also that need for additional support and awareness. And that's essentially what we're doing over the next few months here, is we're empowering parents with information. We want to be that bridge or that platform for them. So, now, you were talking in general in terms of having a plan, an educational plan. Would you like to elaborate on, in your thought, what is a good plan for, let's say, someone who doesn't have a whole lot of money? What do you think are some simple things that could be a part of your plan?
Well, the plan can be based on the trends in which certain industries, certain technologies are headed.
Okay.
We already know, it's already been made known that, for instance, that there's going to be nearly a half a million number of pilots that's going to be shortage in the commercial field, and about 12,000 in the military.
Okay.
Well, should not you take that third grade and start preparing them in that direction? So the information is announced in the newspapers. So if people, the trends in which the industries are going, what new upcoming industries, they are readily known. U.S. Department of Bureau of Labor Statistics published that information. Now, as far as those who don't, you know, there's a large number, hundreds of dozens of parents that already know, but they may be coming from underprivileged circumstances, and they don't have the ability to pay taxes toward a school district that you don't use, while at the same time paying for your child to receive the type of education that you want him or her to have. So they're the ones I think you should go with first. It's just like driving. If you have somebody who know how to park, know how to turn, know how to control their vehicle speed, that's the one you go ahead and put in the advanced program rather than the one who have never been in a car in their life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and you said something interesting. You made mention of early as third grade focusing on preparation for studies in the sciences, things of that nature. Is there a particular reason why you chose third grade, or do you think that that preparation begins earlier or at a later point in their the child's?
Well, we used to have the grade limit had set higher than that, but I was at the, I told you I was on Saturdays, that local NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers, had workshops on Saturdays where children come from many different high schools or many schools, period. And one Saturday, there was this little tiny black girl, had on her cute little glasses, had a pad and her pencil. And she was taking notes as if she was a high school student. And I asked her mother, I said, what grade is she in? She's in the third grade.
Is that right? Wow.
Absolutely.
Okay. So your point is that there is no harm if you focus in earlier grades in preparing them for the higher level math. Now, it's interesting because you start introducing those structured math skills at about third grade. You're talking about addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, you know, introducing them to exponents, things of that nature. So that's an interesting thing. At home, if you, let's stick with the third grade at home. You have this young lady and others like that. What type of things do you think, even in a small home where there's not a lot of financial resources, what are some things if we had to buy a child a toy for Christmas or want to give a birthday gift, what are some tools or apparatus you think that would help spark and encourage such an interest?
Well, as I told you last week, is that you can buy math workbooks relatively cheap and have that child do 100 problems every night.
Okay.
Every night. From the simplest math, working their way up through the years to the highest order of mathematical equations. And at some point in time, you're going to have to put somebody else with that child because they're going to know more than you. So that's a simple thing that can be done. Another thing you can do is to expose them to many different environments, whether the library, museum, on-campus, college campus, lectures. There's also botanical, there's all sorts of things that one can expose a child to in order to see exactly and get a general picture of where their skills lie.
Okay. Well, you know, I like what you're saying. And here's one thing that seems to be of concern. And that is there's a notion that in order for me to help my child, I have to have some sort of educational level. I have to be on a certain educational level and have mastered certain skill sets myself. And I just want to state emphatically that that's not the case. Perhaps a parent may not be literate themselves or very strong in numeracy, math, and computations. But I think something you said is reaching outside beyond your bounds or experiences, your environment, to find the help that they can use. And I think that's a very powerful point. And I would go a step further to say that one of the things that from a community standpoint that can happen is that local churches and groups like that can collaborate themselves in such a way. That's not to suggest no one is doing that, but I do know that right here in Nashville there are certain churches that do have tutorial services. Their challenge is getting a lot of people to come out and take advantage of it. That's a whole other topic there. But certainly if we were strategic and we were focused about that, perhaps that can be a benefit to many. What's your thought on that?
Well, that should be the agenda of any organized group of people. It's
okay.
Provide the wherewithal for the children.
Right.
You want your children to achieve higher than you did. So, as you mentioned, if you had church groups, those church groups could utilize a space, the basement, and put in the resources and apparatuses that's needed in order to improve on the skills of those children.
Okay.
And in some areas of study, you have industries that will contribute technology where those young people can be studying with what is being used in the industry.
Okay. Now, so, I can hear the argument that, you know, I hear what you're saying, but everybody don't have the orientation or the wherewithal that you have, and that's going to take a lot for them to accomplish. Is that a justifiable excuse not to at least try what you're describing there, Paula?
It's enough for parents out there that who do have the wherewithal. That's enough to keep you busy.
All right. Well, let me just do a station identification. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. And tonight, this is a special podcast from 6 to 7:30. We're focusing on information relative to parent choice. And as you can see in the banner behind me, the focus is Parent Choice Network. We're building a parent choice network right here in Nashville, Davidson County. And we want you to participate with us. We're grateful to have a caller from St. Louis to call in and share with us our conversation. I'd like to encourage you to call us here at 657-383-0944. Again, that number is 657-383-0944. You can join the live conversation as we talk about choice options for parents and their children in education. Not something that is just a handout, but it is a hand up and a support, and it can help you to improve the overall quality of life for your children. So we want to encourage you to do that. Give us a call here, 657-383-0944, and call if you don't mind. I'm going to shift a little bit to we were talking about some of the history of public education and working our way into where we are in 2020. We just had Dr. King Day celebration, and there were a lot of things that were done, and I hope that young people are familiar with his contribution to America and indeed the world. We want to certainly build on that knowledge base. One thing that is interesting is another historical date that I think that will kind of help us understand how public education has unfolded in America, and specifically as germane to Tennessee, Nashville, Davidson County. Homer Plessy, a 30-year-old African-American, challenged the state of Louisiana in its Separate Car Act. There he argued that requiring blacks to ride in separate railroad cars violated both their 13th and 14th Amendments. The United States Supreme Court upholds Louisiana's position and their law, stating that the majority opinion that the intent of the 14th Amendment had not been intended to abolish distinctions based on color. Well, thus the Supreme Court ruling in the case of Plessy versus Ferguson makes separate but equal policies legal. That was in 1896. It becomes a legal precedent used to justify many other segregation laws, including separate but equal education. Now I'm going to come up to a little bit later in the 1950s and look at this particular law. If, by the way, we have some, this is a live podcast, so we have people in the room with us, so bear with us there if you hear some other conversation. We're doing a live stream at a public library open to the general public there. All right, so St. Louis, do you think that when you look back historically at the fact that there were efforts made to inhibit or prevent people from things like riding in cars and even relative to education, that this is a time for people to understand in particular why you must take advantage of every resource that's available for you to empower your children and your families?
Well, they did at that time, too. Rosenthal built over 6,000 schools for African Americans in the South.
Okay.
Over 6,000. Plus, he worked with Booker T. Washington. Courts make decisions not only on the law, but also it makes decisions based on the traditions and the public accepted norms.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the public accepted norms was different than what they are today.
True.
At one time, the public accepted norms were that if you married a young lady that was 12 or 14, was nothing wrong with it. People that come from countries where the law, it's okay to marry, have several wives, well, if they want to have a spousal visa, they can only bring one wife to this country because the public accepted norms is one wife, one husband.
Okay. All right.
So back then, that was the public accepted norms.
Right, right. And as we travel through time, we're going to discover that that norm had changed. And in many ways, arguably, it opened the door to a better engagement and opportunities for many people who wanted to learn. Now, historically, it was illegal for anyone to teach a slave how to read or write. And they can actually be killed, hung, if they did so. And it's interesting today how so many people haven't learned how to really appreciate and embrace the power of an education, and specifically a public education, how you can make that work for you. So let me just for a second, I want to go down our timeline here. Now, we went from 1791.
If I could stop you there, real
quick. All right, go ahead.
See,
go ahead.
It was illegal in some states and jurisdictions. It wasn't illegal all over the country.
Okay.
Because you look at the things that blacks achieved back during those times and inventions and also positions, they could not have done that just walking out of a cabin. They had to get some form of type of education. So in some states, that was the truth, but it wasn't all over.
Gotcha. I want to back up just for a second and go back to, I know I went to 1896, but let me go back, I think this is important to mention this, to 1867, where the Department of Education, United States Department of Education, was created for the express purpose to help states. We mentioned earlier that the 10th Amendment empowered each state to come up with their own laws and policies relative to education. But in 1867, the Department of Education was created just so that they can help states establish effective schools, recognizing the importance and the power of education. And what is interesting is that while the federal government could not make states do anything, they created agreements and supports and situations where they will give certain states certain federal dollars from taxes and what have you if they were to be in compliance with certain rules and regulations relative to education. So, and that brings me back to Plessy versus Ferguson case and how in many ways it was a landmark case because it established the point that education should not focus on a person's ethnicity, on their gender or race or anything like that, but it should focus on what was right, particularly as related to the 14th Amendment, human rights, things that are decent and honorable for anyone. Now, by 1918, all of the states had what is known as compulsory attendance laws. So we can see the progression in terms of public education and how the Constitution says nothing about it. But over time, the express need basically came where the federal government became more involved in this whole process by this date that we're talking about in 1918. And they established compulsory attendance, which simply means you have to go. By 1918, all states had some kind of law in their state constitution that said children of a certain age have to attend school. Now, what's interesting about that, Carla, is that there are people who feel as though that is unfair for them to be forced to go to school if they don't want to. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, one of the reasons why public education came into existence was not the only one, but it was designed to assimilate immigrants into the American way of life.
Okay.
Immigrants coming from other parts of the world where things was common to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the idea was to make them where things are common to the American way of life.
Ah. Now, that's, you're saying some key there. Common to the American way. So it's about acculturation or acclimating foreigners to the American way of life. That is the purpose of a public education, is to ensure that all citizens have a basic knowledge and understanding of what's expected as an American citizen. Would you agree that that's a fair meaning or definition?
In particular, the U.S. Constitution, which is not taught today. Thus, by you see so many different incidents on the news of groups acting out in certain ways. You see young people making statements that's really far-fetched. And you see the curtailment of certain freedoms on college campuses, if not even in the elementary grade of public schools. So that there is very dangerous. I think it's wrong. I think a child should be acclimated in the ways of this country. They should know their civic duties. They should know the United States Constitution and what it means.
Okay. Well, so you're making the case that many have, that it's important to have, in some states it's required that before you advance from the eighth grade to high school or secondary level learning, that you pass the U.S. Constitution I know in Illinois it was, you had to get at least a 80 on the Constitution in eighth grade in order for you to move to the ninth grade level. I think that does Missouri still have that? Or I believe Missouri and Illinois and Indiana had similar laws to that. Is that your understanding, that in Missouri that's the case?
Well, I don't know if they've implemented that at the state level, the state legislature in Missouri.
Okay.
But you do have schools that require it, yes. It's called the parents. That's what the parents want them to have.
Yeah. And the point that's being made is that it does give young people a sense of awareness of not only their rights as citizens, but certain expectations as a citizen as well. And I would agree that it seems as though many young people are frustrated and angry because they are under the misconception that education is automatically going to give you everything you want, or that the government should be held accountable for assuring those things. when interestingly enough, what an education does is give you independence and empowerment to become economically stable and independent, such that not the government or anyone else dictates your quality of life as an adult, you know. And so, again, it's very important for people to understand just how important education is. And let me just pause for a second to reiterate that you're listening to Talk Straight here, and tonight our focus is on Parent Choice Network. This is a special presentation. We're going to be doing a number of them over the next few months, where we're just educating parents about the importance of resources and opportunities that are available for you, and specifically through what's called the Educational Savings Account in Tennessee, specifically in Davidson County and Shelby County schools, or those children that are in the Achievement School District. We hope to, again, let me just say, many of you perhaps were looking for our guest to be with us tonight, and she apologized for not being able to make it due to unforeseen circumstances, and she promised that as soon as she can that she would give us a rain check. So she's not here to answer those questions directly, so we're just bringing our topic generically from a historical perspective in terms of education. On with us tonight is a caller from St. Louis who's been keeping up with us over the last couple of years or so. We appreciate that. I want to encourage you to give us a call, 657-383-0944. That is the number in the studio here. You can call us right now. If you're following us on Facebook Live, I encourage you to give us a call here. Don't hesitate. I'll be happy to answer whatever questions I can specifically about the Parent Choice Network. If you go to www.pcntn.org. Again, that's www.pcntn.org. That's Parent Choice Network Tennessee.org. You can register there and see if you qualify. There's a few simple questions for you to answer. You can see if you qualify. Now, there are funds rolling out this year that can be used for a number of things. Things such as tuition and fees on the pre-K through 11th grade, fees for transportation, required textbooks, computers or devices used for educational purposes, school uniforms, tutoring services provided by an approved tutor or facility, summer or after-school educational programs, educational therapy services, fees for high school dual enrollment courses at colleges or universities. So if you have a child who is taking advanced courses, advanced placement courses, this will help cover those costs. And annual unused funds remaining after K-12 may be rolled over into a college fund for that student for tuition. Fees and textbooks at eligible colleges and universities. Also, vocational, technical, or trade schools. So many of the things that people have been crying for in terms of funding and opportunities, they're here now. And what we're doing is the awareness campaign to make you aware of that. So I want to encourage you again to go to pcntn.org and answer those few questions, and we'd be able to get back with you and let you know how you square on that in terms of being able to benefit from that. Very rarely do you have the opportunity for parents to get direct information. A lot of times there's a buffer, a barrier, I should say, with schools, not all of them. There are some schools, some public schools, that do a fabulous job of engaging their parents, and parents are engaged in the school. But what we do know, sadly, is that for many of those schools in particular that have incidents of low performance on part of the student, there's a breakdown in communication. There's a need to build a bridge. And that's really what building families and communities is about. Just what it says, building those families and communities. Hopefully building those bridges there. So again, I want to encourage you, we're going to be here until 7:30. To give us a call here at 657-383-0944. That's the number to call, and we encourage you to engage with us there. All right. So if I might, just for a second, did you have another question or comment before I go to another historical period here? Caller?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, very good. So one other thing is that in 1954, we talked about 1896 and the Plessy versus Ferguson case, the basis for that adjudicated position part of the Supreme Court. Well, we talked about how it was based on public sentiment and need. In 1954, on May 17th, United States Supreme Court announces that it's made a decision in the case brought before it, Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka, which was in Kansas. And they ruled that separate educational facilities are inherently unequal, thus overturning its previous ruling in 1896, case of Plessy versus Ferguson. Here's what's interesting about all of that. This is only germane to public education. In a private environment, this doesn't really matter. But the United States went out of its way to correct a wrong, to ensure that people got a quality education. And we heard earlier how the Department of Education was designed early on to ensure that states had some way of having decent schools for citizens. And what's interesting to me is that Thurgood Marshall, I've asked a question before, if he were here today, how would he assess the progress of the 1954 decision? And speaking specifically to those who he advocated on behalf of in the court, would he think that adequately those people took full advantage of those efforts? Let me pose that question to you, caller. What do you think Marshall would think about how well, particularly African Americans and minorities, have taken advantage of the effort to really bring equality in terms of everybody being in the same building, having the same resources, the same equipment, and things of that nature?
Well, there's no such thing as equality.
What? Okay. Well, explain that for us. What do you mean by that? There's no such thing as equality, he says. What do you mean by that, Paul?
Because you always going to have a case where some are going to be able to have access and provide by their own means more so than others will.
Okay.
So you're not going to have no equal outcomes. There shouldn't be no deterrent to pursuits, but there shouldn't be no expectations of having equal outcomes. Another thing. That suit was put too much emphasis on physical presence in certain environments. But you also had blacks that did not like that decision. You had people in Eaton, Florida, Hurston, the singer, the poet, entertainer. She said that the people there in Eaton, Florida, didn't like that decision because what it done, it destroyed their schools.
Interesting.
There was a high school in North Carolina. I think it was called Wilkinson. I'm not sure. It was an all-black high school.
That's an interesting
students,
argument.
Yeah, the students came out of there was par none.
Yeah.
And the judge said that you got to deseg this school. And then
now,
the academics went down.
Well, so you make an interesting point. Now, historically, perhaps some of the best performance, if we look at it and we're intellectually honest, historically African-Americans seem to have, by and large, and we're not saying that about everybody today, but they've done very well when it seemed like they were under the pressure to compete, right, even when things were not equal. But after the integration process, it seemed as if a lot of young people did not quite have the fire and the desire to take advantage of education. It was almost, it was taken for granted, if you will.
Well,
there were so many things that came your way. And which, go ahead, what were we going to say? What do you think of that?
That was not pertaining to integration, because I know of some all-black schools that ain't worth a slop. And they get,
okay,
they've gotten so bad that they're about ready to close. That's
okay.
Why kind of I told you to go on YouTube and look up and look view that one school in South Central LA called Marcus Garvey Academy, Los Angeles. And you see an all-black school at the time that that video was made. It's par none.
But, so really, excuse me for cutting you off, really the point that you're making is that it's not so much the building as it is the students and the engagement of the students perhaps and their parents working with those educators, with the administrators to take advantage of teaching and learning. Is that a fair assessment there?
Yeah, and you don't have to have certified teachers neither.
Mm.
That's a myth, because at that
okay.
school, you have people who come
okay.
out of industry and are teaching classes, because
true.
What they're
true.
Teaching is being applied every day in their industry at their workplace.
That's true.
They better know than a teacher would.
Yeah. And another point there is that many homeschool parents are doing a tremendous job at preparing their children to pass standardized tests. And in most states, they're required to pass it in order to get credit to go on to get high school credits at Carnegie units and go to college. And they're doing a great job. So it's not necessarily the school itself that's bad. And interestingly enough, we're in Davidson County, we're in the process, and let me just announce this, we're Metro Schools, our public school system here. As I said earlier, there are many of them that are doing a fabulous job, but they're in the process now of rolling out your option and your choices to go to even those metro schools or charter schools. And we want to make sure people are aware of options for homeschool as well, and now this new opportunity with the Educational Savings Account. So this is a season of which we, in fact, we have National School Choice Week on next Monday. And that's just, you know, parents, it's important for you to realize that you're not just subject to one thing, but there are many options for you. And our focus is on empowering parents with information and let you make that choice. But there, I've heard in my experiences, even as a political candidate for political office, pastor for 24 years or so, there are many people who have expressed a tremendous interest in more information. So they would argue that, yes, I do recognize that there are some challenges with my child. I'm looking at one thing in particular here that is an opportunity, educational therapy service. There are many children who may come with social, emotional issues. Your children. Well, there's an opportunity for you to get the support they need specifically for educational purposes, what have you. And I encourage you to go to PCNTN.org. That's Parent Choice Network, Tennessee.org. PCNTN. And then there are a few questions to answer there, and they're basically determined to see how well you qualify, and we'll be able to let you know, hey, there's an opportunity here for you. So there's a lot that can be said. And I'm not in the business of making excuses. I want to empower people to do for themselves. One of the things I focused on even as a candidate for public office, is not to run in a traditional race as a politician, but as an advocate for people. One of the reasons we're doing what we do now is because the things we talked about, that was one of our key elements for campaign platforms. It's because I do, as I said then, and many of you may have seen me here in the Nashville area, I'm serious about the fact that we need to help our children. We need to empower parents to do that. Nobody, I don't believe anyone, loves or understands your child better than you do. If there's a need for help, let's get that. Let's get that. So that informs our decision on what we do. We still got 30 minutes. You're listening to Talk Straight here on this live podcast. And if you follow us on Facebook, we got about 30 minutes before we wrap up tonight. I want to encourage you to give me a call here at 657-383-0944. And that number is 657-383-0944. Call us in the studio. You just want to make a statement, want to ask a question, still have a little time, you can do that. You can post your question and or comment on Facebook as well, and we're checking that to see if we have that for you. Feel free to do so, and we'd love to engage you and answer your question and comments there and kind of go from there. So one other thing that I think is important, and I see this a lot in the news, is that there are a lot of parents who are up to here, up to their heads, feel like in anguish and frustration because they just don't see things getting any better. Well, I want to tell you tonight that the determination between things getting better, the difference where they are now, them getting better is with you. One of the ways that you are able to ensure that is that you know. Knowledge is power. Okay? And that's why we're again focusing on the whole idea of empowering parents with information. What parents? Any parent who wants the best for their children. In the public session setting, in the charter school setting, if you're a homeschool parent, or even if you want opportunities for private school or even tutorial services, there is information there. Again, let me reiterate that I encourage you to go to pcntn.org. That's pcntn.org. And again, for those of you that are just maybe just tuning in, building families and communities. That's one of our focus about education.
I'll be right back, Doc.
Okay. And we have this national podcast that we've been doing for the last 4 years, but now we are specifically focusing on providing information to you, our parents, about how you can empower yourself through information. And get in touch with us there. There's an information there for you to reach us, my team and I. Of course, you know, Building Families and Communities has been in Nashville since 1998, and we continue to exact our mission to improve the quality of life for families. And so that being said, tonight I want to reiterate that perhaps you saw an earlier promotion where we were going to have our invited guest for tonight, Ms. Hope or Esperanza Sorianto McCrary, was going to be on with us from the State Department of Education. She sends her apologies for not being able to be here tonight due to some unforeseen circumstances. However, she does offer that when she can, it's possible, to the extent that she can, she'll be here and give us a rain check. So we are hopeful that we'll be able to get her back sometime in the near future there. But rest assured that for the next few months, we're going to be doing this parent outreach. And I want to encourage you to reach out to us there. and connect with there. There's an email that you can go to. It's info@tcncn.org. And you go there and send us a message. Perhaps you don't want to be on blast. That's okay. That's perfectly fine. Send me an email at info@tcntn.org. I'd love to respond individually to your question, your comment. Again, the most important thing is that we're able to help parents get what they need for their children. We've been seeing too many incidents of young people fall through the cracks and not do well in our city. Unfortunately, you've seen the incidents here locally relative to the courts, the juvenile courts, and some of the challenges there. And I just believe that is all our responsibility, and we should take it that way. It's not just one person, but we should make it all of our business, to ensure that young people get what they need. Okay, and that's just what I am. You know, I'm, as I told people, that's the primary focus is to advocate for what's best for all of our citizens. I believe then, Nashville, we can grow together, we can get stronger, and we can do well. All right, so this is Talk Straight you're listening to. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to hit a few more historical facts there. But before I do that, I'm going to do a commercial break here. And then when we come back, we will follow up. 657-383-0944 is the number to call. Again, 657-383-0944 is the number to call. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked, well, I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
And you're back here listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dupree. Grateful for those of you perhaps that are following us on Facebook live stream, either now or later. For those that you will go to blogtalkradio.com/BFC Institute later and to access it, or go to our website at tcncn.org. And you can access even the previous shows that we've had. Want to encourage you again to get in touch with us. Again, that blog page where we would love to communicate with you is tcntn.org. one of the questions, a couple of questions I want to ask, answer that may you may be wondering about relative to educational savings account. Who can participate, and what schools can participate? Who can participate, and what schools can participate? Well, the first question of who can. Students must be in grades kindergarten through 11th grade in the 2020-2021 school year. Students must be zoned to attend either Shelby County schools or Metro Nashville schools or the State Achievement District schools. And let me just emphasize that that is those schools that the state have deemed low performing under the 5% threshold for annual school improvement. All right? Students must be one of the following: enrolled in a Tennessee public school for the prior school year, entering kindergarten, or entering any grade having just moved Tennessee, then you're eligible. Let me repeat those again. Enrolled in a Tennessee public school for the prior school year, entering kindergarten, or entering a grade having just moved to Tennessee. Students' household income must not exceed $43,966 for a two-person household, $55,450 for a three-person household, $66,950 for a four-person household, or $78,442 for a five-person household for the 2019-2020 school year. Limits will increase slightly each year, as projected. Parents must verify household income annually by submitting their federal tax returns from the previous year or proof that the household is eligible for temporary assistance for needy families, or TANF as it's called. All right, so the question, what schools can participate? Well, here it is. Participating schools must be classified as Category 1, 2, or 3 by the Tennessee Department of Education. Private schools remain independent but cannot discriminate on the basis of race, color, or national origin. Participating schools are not required to alter their creeds, practices, or curriculum. Schools must administer the state end-of-year Tennessee Ready test for math and English language arts for students with an ESA in grades 3 through 11 each year. Lastly, faculty at participating schools must undergo background checks. Here's the unique thing. While we just talked about the opportunity for private schools in addition to your traditional public schools or charter schools or even homeschooling option, there's an opportunity for if your child is in Metro for them to still benefit from tutorial service. And I know that that's where many people are. They may not be interested in moving their child per se, but they know their child just needs some additional academic support and enrichment opportunities there. There are several groups around town that focus on standardized test preparation, the ACT and the SAT, do a great job. Opportunities there to offset costs for tutoring and so forth. And educational savings account provides those opportunities as well. I want to again encourage you to go to tcnpn.org to get more information. That's really what we're about, as I said previously, is about that information. Now, having said that, we're going to prepare, so they have about 15 minutes. You can still call us here. The next few minutes, 657-383-0101. 0944. That's the number that you can call us at 657-383-0944. I want to come up in time. We started from 1791. We've been talking about public education in America, and we related it to Tennessee specifically. One case in 1925, a Tennessee-related case, where the Tennessee versus John Scopes, it's called the Monkey Trial. It captures natural attention as John Scopes, who was a high school biology teacher, is charged with the heinous crime of teaching evolution, which is a violation of the Butler Act. The trial ends in Scopes' conviction. The evolution versus creationism controversy still exists today. Why do I bring that up? Because it's important to understand, as we said earlier, each state makes their own education. And our caller from St. Louis correctly pointed out the fact that oftentimes those laws governing things like education are based on public sentiment. Now, time has progressed, and even Tennessee has become less stringent in many ways relative to certain perceptions and ideas of religious dogma and things of that nature. But the real point here is that as a parent, you can choose where your child can and should best learn. We have an issue with a lot of young people who I'm convinced have great potential and infinite value. But there's a need to focus on character development. With that, we can bridge the gap between a lot of the behavioral issues that lead them to missing out on great opportunities in our public schools. So who do we blame? We blame no one. No one is mad for the devil, but the devil. There's no need to blame anyone. What we can do is take advantage of present opportunity. Then we're going to have to waste our time on the finger of blame. Because what happens is when grown people get caught up in the blame game and fighting and bickering, bantering back and forth, our babies get lost. Our babies get lost. So I have an idea. I have a suggestion. Rather than spending our time complaining, pointing blame, fighting, or even being upset, let's ask ourselves, how can I take advantage of the opportunities I can find at pcntn.org? What can I do to, as a parent, no one else will, what can I do to ensure that my children get what they need and are able to progress academically one grade level to the next? I think if we did that, beloved, that we'll find ourselves in a different position, regardless of what history has brought about to this point. We cannot go back to those years and change sentiment then, what has happened up until now. But what we can do is take advantage of these opportunities right here and right now. And I implore you to do so. All right? So, caller, are you still there? 4644.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We got another 10 minutes before we wrap up. Hey, you have a final thought you want to share with us before we cut out of here?
Well, I don't know, especially about the plan you're mentioning there in the state of Tennessee, but at the federal level, there's several plans, but one that this administration, the Donald Trump administration, has made available to parents, where they can utilize the 529 college saving plan at any point along that child's educational career, from preschool on up through high school and college.
Mm-hmm.
And in ways that you mentioned, people should check and see just to what extent that plan can be utilized. I think it's a good thing myself.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm convinced that with full transparency, I'll tell you, I've long advocated for particularly African-American community, where we have a lot of African-American young men in particular, young ladies too, but young men in particular, who are falling by the wayside, that we should consider starting schools or institutions or environments where we can take them in, we can save them, because it's not a good excuse to just say we're going to have to write them off. I don't believe that. And hence, I'm of the mindset to start our own school.
Well, you can do that, but somebody's got to pay for it. That's the main thing. Your idea of starting your own school is not a new one. It's been around for over 100 years.
Absolutely.
But the key thing is that somebody has to pay, because people aren't going to come in and work for nothing.
Here's the good
thing. You know another thing, too.
Hold that thought. Don't lose your thought. Stay right there for a second. I'm going to come right back to you. Here's the good thing. Right now, there's an opportunity that if you want to send your child to, let's say, a school that I started, but for sake of argument here, conversation, you can use these funds to do so. But the point is that they're available.
That's good.
The point is they're available. Take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, caller. What were you going to say?
And you know, I was going to say another thing. When you look at black society and the progress in the areas that it has made that progress, a lot of it lies in entertainment. And we know that when children are asked what they would like to achieve, it's usually mimicking some entertainer. Now, one reason why you have such an imbalance toward that particular paradigm is because young people are not utilizing their time in the academic field.
Okay.
They got spare time. Yeah, they got spare time to be listening and watching and then saying to themselves, that's what I want to be.
Okay, that's a good point. I think that, you know, and to an earlier point that we were making, in large measure, that's something that as a parent you can control. You can control that. You can control the management of your children's time. I've heard people say, you're not going to be with them all the time. Well, not 24 hours a day exactly, but you can manage where they are and what experiences they're exposed to. And to large measure, hold someone to account for, if you leave them with them, making sure that they're safe and they're getting the information that they need. So I think you make an excellent point there that all is not lost. You know, there is that possibility that you can control those things. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to have advanced degrees to do that. You can be an everyday, ordinary parent who loves your children enough to look out for them in that way. What were you going to say, Colin?
And the young people should be set up to have alternatives. It could be academics and sports, or it could be some other paradigm. But you just can't let that child put all their emphasis in one area. And I think you put too much in sports. Heck, you can drive by some field at 8 o'clock at night, and you got young people out there practicing football. Well, what about their education? What's going on with that? And apparently it's not being done because the data says that it's not.
Okay. We got work to do. We still have work to do, and I'm hopeful that our quest, our campaign here to educate and to empower parents will bring about that change. Let me do this. Caller, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Where's the rest of your callers?
I'm not sure. Probably because we on a modified schedule, some of them got lost. They'll likely be with us on our traditional hour on Thursday. I'm not really sure, though. But as I mentioned, we're going to be changing a few of our schedule here, and we're just rolling out our awareness campaign. So I've noticed, thanks to the Facebook people, many of them have liked our Parent Choice Network page. Thank you very much. And we want
to encourage
you.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
All right, thank you so much for joining us there. I want to encourage you to stick with us, you know, because the whole point here is to empower all of us. When we do that, we can save our babies. And guess what? They can be just as successful as anyone else. I'm talking about those of our babies who perhaps have been caught up in the street and have some sort of record, even a juvenile record. There's hope for them. There's hope for them. There's hope for them. And what we want to do is to do everything we can to guarantee them those best opportunities to improve their quality of life. And when we do that, friends, when we do that, we can find the success we need and we want for their children. So I want to encourage you again to be with us and to stay with us and join us in this process of making the difference for not some, but all of our children. Not some, but all of our children. And when you do that, we'll make it. Look like we got a caller here, and let me just say hello to her. Out of Florida, 3072. Have you been with us a while, 3072?
Hey, no, just a few minutes. I didn't know you modified your time again for this week.
We were just talking about that. We got just about 2.5 minutes, but we're doing a special awareness campaign. And so there are going to be a couple of Thursday nights. We'll try to announce it. I'll do a better job about making that known on this coming Thursday when we get back to our regular schedule. But we're at a particular location in Nashville for the rest of this month where we'll be here from 6 to 7:30. And I realize that some of our regular followers have missed us there. But thank you for checking in with us. Thank you. We'll make it up to you Thursday.
Yeah, I thought I was on time. That's okay.
Now, well, you know I love you like peanut butter loves jelly. We appreciate it. That's our call out of Jacksonville, Florida. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you on Thursday night.
All right
then.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Nashville, thank you again for taking your time. PCN.org. PCNTN.org. That is the blog page that I invite you to join us on. Give me an email. Send me an email at info@PCNTN.org. I'd love to answer your individual specific questions there and get back with you there, okay? This is your host for Talk Straight, as well as the consultant that is pushing the educational awareness on Parent Choice Network, educational savings accounts, as we look at Parents' Choice and Metro MNPS, public schools, charter schools, options for homeschooling, and we also focus in on opportunities for educational savings accounts. This is your host, Ruben Doctor. We'll be back for this special thing on next Tuesday, right back here at Bordeaux Public Library, and we'll see you then, but we'll be on our regular broadcast for Thursday night if you follow us on Facebook or the group this coming Thursday night, 7 o'clock p.m. to 9 p.m. Again, we want to thank you for joining us, and we will see you on next this coming Thursday.